Welcome to the Black College Sports and Education Foundation Weekly Podcast, where we equip students, athletes, their families, and supporters with vital tools and information that will impact their decisions on educational opportunities and careers. Tune in every Thursday night at 7 Eastern Standard Time as we host prominent guests from a variety of backgrounds, such as education, sports, medicine, and the corporate world. Remember, the Black College Sports and Education Foundation is your one-stop resource center. Now here's your host, Gil McGregor.
Welcome, everybody, to today's podcast. You know, in the podcast of the past, we have tried to bring you people who are considered legends of the game, especially as it relates to Black College. We had the great Willis Reed on, the captain who led the Knicks to world championships. And then we had Sam Jones, who was part of the dynasty known as the Boston Celtics. And we're talking many championships for him. But today, we have the son of the legendary Clarence Big House Gaines, who undoubtedly cast the largest shadow as it relates to Black college, all college sports coaches. The Big House, as he was known, was just a legend in his time and in all the time past. We are fortunate, we are blessed, and we are pleased to have today his son, Clarence Gaines Jr. Welcome to our podcast, man.
Glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me to share my thoughts and my remembrances about my father.
Well, you know, you said something to me when I first made the contact. You told me that you would always welcome an opportunity to do that. And I thought, boy, I got a son. I wonder, does he feel the same way about me? But that is such a wonderful thing. And when you look back on your life with your father and his legacy, and he was your dad, but he belonged to so many other people. How did you, once you were old enough to realize that, how did you deal with that?
He didn't have to deal with it, you know, it's just a part of circumstances and who he was and who our family was, and you know, the college was an extension of our family. And I remember speaking at my father's eulogy, and I shouted out a message not only to my sister, but to all his sons and daughters, and that would be all the young people that he impacted through his life, whether that be in the community, or that be in college, whether it be in church. Dad was able to touch a lot of human beings and had a lot of sons and daughters when he was at Winston-Salem State University. He was not only a part of the athletic department, but he was also head of the physical education department for many years. So like many coaches of his day, he's not only a coach, he was a teacher. And he taught a lot of lessons through sports and through life and just being who he was.
Well, let's continue along that line. Then let's talk about a couple of lessons he may have taught that could have pertained directly to you or to some of those sons that were on the basketball team, but a couple of things that kind of stick in your mind when you think of your pops.
You know, Earl Monroe, I've heard him speak a couple of times about my father, and he talks about when things got tight in the huddle, my father would sometimes pull this saying out. I had never heard him say this. And it kind of goes, though, with his philosophy, and I'll go a little bit deeper as I share it. And I actually ended up sharing it with some of the youth teams that I coach because I would get them a quote of the week to kind of impart lessons to them. And Earl said, my dad would say in a crucial time, opportunity does knock at every door, but it's never been known to pick the lock. And basically, you got to go out and get it.
Got to go get it, yeah.
And part of that is that you have to be prepared to go get it, and you have to set yourself up for success. And it's part of my family. My mother was an educator as well. She was a teacher and a guidance counselor in the public school system in Forsyth County in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. First at Atkins High School, which was a predominantly Black school. She was a Latin and English teacher. And then she moved to East Forsyth High School when integration came about in the early 70s in Winston-Salem. So they instilled in us a solid foundation in terms of that was going to be something important in our life to get your education. And it wasn't done overtly. It was done by example. For example, in my downstairs basement, my dad had his diplomas on the wall, one from Morgan State University, where he went to college. He got the name Big House Gaines and was an All-American football player. And as he describes himself, was a hatchet man in basketball. He wasn't much of a basketball player. But, you know, my dad, if he had come along at the right time in this day and age, you know, given his physical attributes and his speed, he would have been definitely in the NFL. But he also went on to Columbia Teachers College to get his postgraduate degree, as did my mother. And an interesting story for the listener about going to Columbia, and I just found this out a few years ago, was that my dad didn't have to pay to go to Columbia Teachers College. The state of North Carolina did. And the reason they did was because they didn't have any postgraduate schools for blacks at the time when he was coming up to go to, obviously because of segregation. So he got a quality education on behalf of the state of North Carolina at an Ivy League school in New York. It also, in the summertime, would also go on the playgrounds and recruit some of his New York athletes to come down to Winston-Salem State. So integration had a lot of negatives, but that shows you how you can take advantage of the system, but at the same time, how back in the day, the system was set up to thwart blacks within the state, but you know they wanted to also give education, and they took advantage of that. So that's a little interesting tidbit I thought the listener might
find it very interesting.
Know about him.
And I think what's also interesting is that you were second-team academic All-American football player at Weidman Mary. I found that kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, I was a quality student. I had a very disappointing athletic career because my weak shoulder injury prone.
When we talk about you and being around the program, because you were young, so do you have memories of that championship year at all?
Of course. I was 9 years old when you really coming of age and were able to connect and remember things. I'll tell you my first memory of that championship year. It's a negative memory because the first game of the year, they play High Point College, which is now High Point University. Gene Littles was on that team, and they actually beat Winston-Salem State College at the time. But later on in that year, they found out that High Point College had an ineligible player, and basically they had to take that loss away from Winston-Salem State. That year they went 31-1, but they actually went 30-2, but because of an ineligible player, High Point College, they started out the season with a loss. But they won all their games during the regular season, and they get to the CIAA tournament, and I think it might have been the semifinal game. And they play North Carolina A&T, and Earl had a bad night, and the team had a bad night, and they lost that game. As a matter of fact, I learned later from Jerry Krause, who I worked for with the Chicago Bulls, that that was the one game that Gene Shue, who was the coach of the Baltimore Bullets, actually saw in person. So Earl didn't play well that game, but like a lot of people who evaluate talent, you can see greatness even when it's bad, because you see how a person steps up. And that team went on to go that year after that disappointment, not winning the CIAA tournament, to the NCAA Division II, or at that time, the College Divisional Regionals, to win the College Division Championship in Evansville against a team now called Southwest Missouri State.
Okay. You know, I think I shared with you, and I want to share with our listeners too, your father was very, very impactful, and it didn't take a whole lot of words or a whole lot of setup for him to be that way. I remember being in your home the only time I was there, and I wasn't there for a long period of time, but your father said to me, he said, you know, you're a pretty good ball player. You come from a real good family. And then your mom and daddy, good people. He said, I don't know why they don't let you shoot the ball a little bit more over that Wake Forest. And I walked out of your house feeling that your dad had validated me as a good ball player. And that meant the world to me. I wasn't going to play for him. And he didn't say, you know, you need to post up down here or you need to do this drop step. He just validated my existence as a ball player. And that meant the world to me.
You know, I love hearing.
It wasn't drawn out, but it meant a lot to me.
I love hearing stories like that, and I hear them all the time about my father when I'm in the basketball world. You know, it's nice when a man has basically now passed away, been dead since 2005, just hear people comment so positively on how he's impacted or influenced their life. One unique thing in this day and age is social media, and I'm on Facebook, and a lot of people from Winston-Salem follow me. And whenever I post anything about my father, it's amazing in terms of the responses I get, the likes. I also took a lot of his photographs over the years because my father was an amateur photographer for many years when he was at Winston-Salem State. He was the one taking the pictures in the early years of the team. And a quick little story. He said his first year at Winston-Salem State, where he didn't make money, he made more money his senior year in college hats on taking pictures, you know, like graduation pictures, and selling them to people. But I put that on Facebook, and there's a picture about, you know, the CE Gain collection, and it's still, a lot of people get a lot of hits, and I put little notes and things about the history of the pictures as I knew it. Of course, the university also has a collection, but this is a we've given a lot of those memories and pictures and memorabilia to the university, but a lot of them I have too. It's only so much that they can digest.
Now, you mentioned Earl Monroe, and obviously he may be the most famous of all of Coach Gaines players. And I said maybe, and I think he, you know, some would argue it's Cleo Hill, and some argue it's Earl. Did your dad have a favorite player?
No, you know what? No one can have a favorite player, right? It's like how you're saying you have a favorite child. But he does have a favorite player in my estimation. And this player actually played with came a little bit after Cleo, and maybe played with, I know Teddy played with Earl Earl's freshman year, and that's Teddy Blunt.
And, okay.
And this is why I say Teddy Blunt is my father's favorite player, because he allowed Teddy Blunt to babysit his children.
Okay.
And I don't know how many other knuckleheads he allowed to babysit his children, but that's how much he trusted Teddy. And Teddy went on to have an incredibly successful career as a citizen and as an educator and as a legislature in Delaware. And a matter of fact, his daughter, who also went to Winston-Salem State, Teddy's children, most of them went to Winston-Salem State, is now a congressman in the U.S. House of Representatives in Delaware. So that's the kind of quality individual and people my father had. And then the legacy, you know, their children's carry on. Because, you know, when you educate a generation, you're educating the future generations as well.
There's a story, because I've heard people talk about now, Clarence, that Winston-Salem, the city, kind of did not blow up at a time when a lot of other cities were blowing up as integration became the rigor of the day, because of the influence, because of the temperament, and because of the vision of your father, that there were some times when people were maybe a little upset with each other, and he would intervene and he would make calmer heads prevail. So what about his impact on that city that you recall or that you can recall to let us know?
Well, I can recall a lot, you know. And, you know, I've written a lot of blogs, posts about Winston-Salem, about my father. And it's on a site I have called CG Scout Perspective. And the listener wants to access it. All they have to do is put Clarence Gaines' blog and it'll come up. And
okay,
some of those stories about Earl Monroe. I have a story about Cleo Hill and Billy Packer, for example. It's called For the Love of the Game, how Billy Packer, Cleo Hill, Clarence Big House Gaines forged a relationship in the segregated South. I have a tribute about Mary Garber, who was a pioneer female sports reporter in our city, a tribute to her, and a lot of things like that. I have relationship between my father and John McClendon. A lot of the stuff comes out of his book. They call me Big House. But all that said, there's a blog I wrote and highlighted a video of my dad talking about the 1967 championship team that played in the same arena that you played in, Memorial Coliseum, which is a city facility, but that was known as Wake Forest's home. You know, the demand for tickets during that time frame was so huge that they had to move out of the little small Whitaker Gymnasium when all the games were played in the Memorial Coliseum. And that was the first time, and that was in the 60s, like 66, that was the 66, 67 championship year. And as you know, that's a very explosive time in our country's history in terms of integration and segregation. The school systems in Winston-Salem hadn't yet been integrated. They were mandated to. They would integrate about 3 to 4 years later. But my father credits that team with helping to bring the city together, when people could sit by one another and realize that they had common interests, and that was a love of quality basketball. So little things like that, that's not a little thing, that's a huge thing in terms
that's
of
a huge sports. Thing. No, you're right. That's a
breaking,
huge thing.
Breaking down barriers in the city and letting people know that you can have excellence in both Wake Forest University and at Winston-Salem State College. And that was done in the form of a national championship. But
now,
here's something a lot of people don't
know. Here's something else people don't know, Clarence.
Yeah.
My first opportunity at broadcasting was
yes.
that I was a color analyst for the Winston-Salem State Rams on the Winston-Salem State University radio network. Your father agreed to let me broadcast the games. And so my foray into being a professional broadcaster came from your dad. I've had 24 years plus broadcasting in the NBA, but it started with your father allowing me to be the color analyst for the Rams.
I love hearing that because he's all about giving young people opportunity. You know, Dad had a philosophy, and kind of go back to that quote that I mentioned to you, and it's a simple philosophy, and that it's a bump philosophy. He wasn't a guy that planned out his life like 5-year goals, 10-year goals. You know, he grinded day by day. Again, he set himself up for success early in his life by being diligent and applying himself. But he said he believed that you had to recognize when opportunity presented itself, that you would bump into things, and then you'd have to seize that moment, carpe diem, or not. And, you know, in terms of knocking on that door and picking that lock. And I used to tell the teams, and I don't want you to pick the lock. I want you to knock the damn door down. And when you see that opportunity, seize it and grasp it. So, you know, those are some of his valuable lessons. But what I was going to say about Winston-Salem State is that a lot of people think that the Winston-Salem State basketball team, that was the first national championship that the school earned. And it's not. It was a track team, earned an NAI national championship, and had a world record holder at the high hurdles named Elias Gilbert, who also went to that university. So
that is good stuff. That's what we wanted you to come on and tell us, because we really want people to know about the consciousness of our community. And that's what I'm calling it, because I think sometimes it gets lost. And I know that your father was so much of the community's consciousness, and it spread beyond the campus of Winston-Salem State. I remember being on a trip back to Winston-Salem with him in Virginia, where there was no lights, and he went into a place and found our way back. And I said, I'd have never gotten out of the van and walked into that place. But he was Big House, and he had no fear. There's a story I'd like, if you don't mind, if you would share with our listeners, and that's the Tanglewood story.
Wow. That's another one I wrote a blog post on, and that's a pretty incredible story. And I want to say the year was around 1970, 71. And, well, I can actually really remember it's 1971. When Tanglewood Park, which is in Clemens, North Carolina, was going to open its doors finally to African Americans and blacks in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and all over the world, you know, because they used to have a great golf tournament out there as well. And we went out before they were going to allow us to go in, unbeknownst to my father, supposedly unbeknownst to him. And they said, no, you can't enter the park today. It will be in a few days. You know, Tanglewood's a public park, too. And it was gifted by the Reynolds family to the city of Winnet, actually to the county, Forsyth County. So public funds were going into that park up until 1971 before it integrated. And I'll never forget that. It really sticks out in my mind as a young kid being turned around. And later on, we would be able to enjoy the park. And but having been turned around that day was something that stuck with me. And what's really interesting about the story, and I allude to this in my blog post, understanding I was part of the Reynolds family, I ended up in the ninth grade in 1972, integrated in ninth grade class of a classmate of mine from St. Benedict School. I went to an all-black Catholic school for 8 years of my life in Winston. But there's a school called Summit School, which is out in the Wake Forest neighborhood, neck of the woods, right across from the Rinalda Gardens, called Summit School. And the Reynolds family also bequeathed that land so that Summit School could be built. And I always found that, interesting years later, that to see how much things had turned in 1 year. I was turned away from a park that was a public park. And then the next year, I'm in this elite school in Winston-Salem, breaking down some barriers and helping to move our city forward. And just by that little small step of integrating a really good school.
You know, I guess what I'd like to hear a little bit about, if you don't mind, with the time we have left, your post-education career in the NBA. A lot of guys think that the only way to get to the NBA is by playing. But you have had a pretty good career in the NBA. Could you enlighten us and the young people who are listening about what you did at that level?
Well, I first ended up with the College of William Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia, and I got my undergraduate degree in business, graduated with honors. I was had an honorary society called Beta Gamma Sigma, which is the equivalent of being a Phi Beta Kappa on the business side. And I was blessed to then be given a scholarship to go to University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and their master's degree program. I was a Morehead Fellow there. Growing up in North Carolina, to get the opportunity to be a Morehead Fellow, I couldn't turn that down, even though I was accepted to Harvard's MBA program on a 2-year deferment. I decided to go with that because, you know, and I neck of the woods, that's such an honor. Then I went there and worked.
Yes.
I worked in the business world, worked for Eastman Kodak Company. And through my father, I had an opportunity. Kind of interesting story. I had an opportunity to meet Jerry Krause. And the way it actually went down was that Jerry had gotten back into the NBA, and he wanted to come to the CIAA tournament. But Jerry didn't like to go
to the GM of the Chicago Bulls.
Of the Chicago Bulls. And Jerry didn't like to go through traditional channels to get tickets or to get a pass because he was known as the sleuth. So he calls my dad up and says, can you get me some tickets? I want to come down and see this specific player at the CIAA tournament. Well, Dad's team had lost, and Earl Monroe's jersey was getting retired in New York. So Dad had to go up to the New York Knicks ceremony. He said, here, I want you to give the tickets to Jerry. So I ended up giving the tickets to Jerry, and he just likes to talk to people. And we ended up talking, and he said, oh, this kid's got something on the ball. And we ended up keeping in contact. And a few years later, he asked me to, while I was out working as a sales manager with Eastman Kodak Company in the West Coast, to do some part-time scouting for him. And I said, Jerry, I'd be happy to do that. And he said, I'm not going to pay you anything. I'll just give you some expenses. But what that led into, that was in the 88-89 year basketball season. After that basketball season was over, right before the draft, he offered me an opportunity to come in and be a scout and a special assistant to him. And I did many, many things with the organization from 1989 to 2000. Not only evaluating talent, but for example, I used to interact with someone that you were very close to, Steve Martin, who's a broadcaster for the Hornets, was in charge of the preseason. I was also in charge of the preseason for the Chicago Bulls, and I would contact Steve and ask him, you know, can we get a game here or there? So, you know, that's my association indirectly with you. And I knew Steve before.
Okay.
I actually actually communicate and talk with you. So I was blessed to be around greatness. 6 world championships.
Yes.
See Michael Jordan up close and personal. See those great Chicago Bulls teams. Formed a relationship also with the coaches on that team, Phil Jackson, which is one reason why when Phil got the opportunity with the New York Knicks, he wanted me to help him out. And I came back to the NBA and I worked for the New York Knicks for about 5 years.
Well, your life, your legacy, the exposure to the giant that cast a shadow that's called Big House is something to be admired. It's something to be listened to, especially for younger people who are hoping to be successful as you were and as you are. And we just want to thank you for sharing stories of your father, sharing stories about your life, and being a part of our broadcast.
Well, I appreciate it, and I hope the listener got a little feel for my dad, and I'm going to end with this. My dad was a lot of things, but first and foremost, he was a lover of life, and he was a lover of people. And if anything, I want people to know that about him. And that's why, to this day, I think he's so treasured, because people saw the love that he had for anybody he was around him who he touched.
Well, again, he touched me. I don't know if he even knew it. He made the city a better city, certainly made the university a better university. And all of sports, when we think about Big House, when we talk about a legend, he fits. And what we want to do is thank you for your time and your willingness to share one more time your dad.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it, Clint.
Like I said, very easy and to talk about. Love him to death. Bye-bye.
Outstanding. Well, listen, everybody, we thank you so much for listening to our podcast. We've had as our guest tonight Clarence Gaines Jr., the son of Clarence Big House Gaines. He shared stories of his father, stories of his life, and we hope you enjoyed it all. Now, you join us next week when we're going to have more guests with interesting stories, conversations, and insights. I'm your host, Gil McGregor. See you next time.
Thank you for tuning into the podcast. For more information about us, please visit our website at www.bcsportsfoundation.com. Also, follow us on Instagram and Twitter at HBCU4Life. That's HBCU4Life. To be a potential guest on our podcast, contact Ed J. Hayes at ed.j.hayes@gmail.com. Tune in next week for another amazing show.